Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien.
Hello.
Holly's been sucked up the polar vortex with the Red Angel again. She pops in and out just like the Red Angel. And guest this week is Dave Kish. Dave Kish has been a listener since the very beginning.
Oh, my God, you poor man.
Hi there.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Speaking of from the beginning, this is our anniversary episode, Aaron. This is like year five, I think.
Out of here.
Yeah.
Really?
We're beginning a new year. It's Synthaholics New Year. It's very much like Chinese New Year, but just for us.
Just for us. Nobody else knows what's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah, what kind of ball drops?
My balls dropped a long time ago, sir. Wow, that's amazing. Well, happy anniversary, Dave. I didn't get you anything.
No, I didn't get you anything either because I haven't seen you since Aquaman.
Yeah, it's been a while. We've been basically doing this remotely since Discovery, basically.
And even before Aquaman, we hadn't been each other. Christmas just messed things up.
We've got quite busy. But happy anniversary, buddy. Another crazy year of drunken insanity.
And Star Trek, and we're supposed to be getting Picard later this year, so even more new Star Trek.
New. Well, welcome, Dave, and I hope you're ready for this insane ride of Discovery.
Oh, yeah, let's do this.
Yes, we got. We didn't get anything really big in news, but we got a lot of reaction over this episode, and I guess we'll get into it when we get into Perpetual Infinity for Star Trek Discovery.
That's how you get into so much of it, because it's Infinity and Perpetual.
It's Perpetual. Maybe Perpetual Hate.
Mm.
It could be. But so we have Star Trek Discovery. We have the episodes Perpetual Infinity, Season 2, Episode 11, and aired March 28th, 2019. And we start off with the beginning with Gabrielle Burnham, doctor, should I say. And they are working on the Daedalus project in Alpha Lupi, which is the star is going to go supernova. And we see a young Michael, and they're getting ready for dinner with her father, Mike.
She somehow looks older than the Michael Burnham that's living with Spock.
And, we see a nice, happy family get ready for dinner. And then Michael's very excited to observe the star go supernova. And when she goes and peeks through the telescope, she sees something coming in for a landing.
Someone's peeing on the planet, Daddy.
That's not pee. Those are Klingons. And we get a giant bird of prey.
It's two penises at once.
Did you like the bird of prey, Dave?
I mean, it's the first time we've ever gotten a look at it, I think. I mean, we saw it in season one, but it was all blurry.
True. Yeah, we did. Right. What was your thoughts on that ship design?
It's interesting. It doesn't look very much like a bird of prey. It's like, if you squint, it sort of does. But I don't know. It's not bad. It's just not super bird of prey. How about you, Other Dave? This is really confusing. We got two Daves.
Other Dave.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'll be Other Dave. I'm the new guy. I thought it was okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking a new take on things. That's one thing I kind of don't like about things that are prequels, because you kind of limit yourself in what you can do.
Unless you're Discovery, then they say, fuck everything else.
Yeah, they're just kind of reimagining the whole thing. I didn't dislike it. I mean, we only got like a quick glimpse of it landing, but I mean, it looked cool.
Kind of cool. I wonder if its wings move, because we haven't gotten a good look at that, because that's one of the cool things about the bird of prey, is that the wings move. It was like, oh, that's so cool, but we haven't gotten much look at it yet, so maybe.
Well, it's what, 10 years before the original series, right?
Yeah.
There's time that you could, maybe.
Although jumping back as far as like 20 years, because this is Michael's a kid.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
That's true. So they stick the young Michael in a closet and tell her to be brave and shut up. And they go at that point. Michael Burnham's mom jumps into the suit, and she is going to go back in time.
Go, Power Rangers!
Yeah, she's going to go. She's going to make sure that none of this ever happens.
I'm going to fix it.
Yeah. So from there, we get Michael. Our current up to date Michael Burnham wakes up in sick bay, and Dr. Culber's there, and Pike and Giorgio, and they're basically tell her, you know, you're basically dead for about a minute, and you have a high dose of tachyon radiation. And then she's Michael goes into like, I thought I saw my mom.
Your mom sterilized you. You'll never have a Klingon half baby. It's fine.
It's fine. You're all right.
You're totally sterile.
Look on the bright side.
Yeah. And then,
do whatever you want. Don't have to worry about it.
And then they basically like, no, that was your mom. She's alive. And I thought we had a very good reaction from Sonequa Martin-Green at this point, where the reaction she has with finding out her mom's alive.
She's delightful.
Yeah, she did a very, very fine job at acting that. It's like, no, she's dead. She's dead. Come on. You're just making that up. And
you're playing with my emotions. Spock, quit playing with my emotions, Spock.
So they have she's down on the planet Esoph 4, and they're containing her in a containment field, and they need a ton of energy to keep her down there, because which we'll get into in a little bit.
We're playing tug of war with the universe.
Exactly. And the red angel suit is has all these mission logs. And Spock hands them over to Michael and said, you know, you need to go through these. Your mom is still unconscious from what happened there, time travel and trapping her. And we're going to wait till she wakes up. And at the time, why don't you just read through these 841 mission logs? So there you go. And
your mom YouTubed for you for years.
She's a great YouTuber.
she YouTubes to an audience of zero.
Yeah, where nobody's alive. YouTube is a platform that's still running out there.
It's control.
Yeah, it is control now, exactly. Then we jump aboard the
control blocks all her videos.
Yeah, that's right. They just close them all down. Flag them all.
Even there's no one to watch them, they still get flagged.
They're still getting flagged no matter what. That's a picture of me. How can you flag me in my own video? So aboard the Section 31 ship, we see Leland is on like a table chair, and he's strapped down
by his head.
Then we have a hologram.
How did this happen?
I know. How did the robot drag him over there?
This makes
who's strapped into that?
I'm assuming there must be tiny little robots doing that kind of stuff.
I don't know. It's just, this is the first of all the plot holes in this episode. How did he get up on the table? How did he get strapped in by his head? Why is there all those machines to strap you up by your head?
I don't know. So many
questions.
Who built all that?
Yeah, exactly. How does nobody know where Leland is? Has no one gone and checked on him?
Checked on him. Yeah, no one checks on the cap.
In hours.
Yeah, exactly. After everything happened. So Leland's strapped to a chair, and then we see Control is using the holographic version of Burnham, and she's Control's talking to Leland, basically saying, you know, in the past we were trying to fool people, but we couldn't do it easily with humans. There's something about humans we could never quite get. And so we're going to use you as a surrogate, basically. And then they inject him with these nanobots.
Nanoprobes.
Honestly, it's a pretty terrifying scene, actually.
It's terrifying on multiple levels. Like, why are they trying to make it sound like the Borg? And it better not be the beginnings of the Borg, because the Borg already exist. You cannot make this the origins of the Borg, for the love of God. Please, don't do this to me.
You say it's pretty terrifying, and it has some to it, but it felt kind of short. Like, there wasn't, like, this super tension buildup, and you were just like biting your nails. Like, what are they going to do? It just kind of happened. Like, they said a lot of words, and then, oh my God, he got something injected in him, and now he's like evil cyborg dude. All right, cool, let's go.
I mean, they could have played it up more horror-y, I agree, Dave, but it was still kind of like uncomfortable a little bit.
Very uncomfortable. I thought it was. And the other thing is, there was, I like how the control even gave Leland a little slight saying, like, you make moral decisions without guilt. And he says you operate from several different truths simultaneously. So, I was like, so what? Now control, which is basically a computer program, is like, you know, give him a little slap, you know, like,
what does control know? Although I don't understand. Control is already an AI. And it wants instructions on how to be more of an AI.
It's not fully sentient yet. So
it's building nanoprobes. It seems pretty sentient enough. It seems really circular reasoning that it's trying to get an AI technology when it's already an AI and it's already doing all these things that are magic.
We can just call it Skynet or something then.
Yeah. I suppose, but I think what it's trying to do is perfect itself. And once it has all that information, it can. And why does AI automatically want to obliterate all biological life? Unless it thinks it's a Nazi AI or something like that, and thinks that it's
everyone's a Jew. Everyone must die.
No, but I mean, it's like, you know, unless that's the case, but whatever.
Well, it sounds like it's not trying to obliterate all life right now. It sounds like it's just trying to take control of things sphere in data. Starfleet, right?
Well, sphere data, and it wants to, obviously, when it gets Leland, basically, or the proxy Leland for control, is just trying to get his hands on the sphere data, so, and he's pretty ruthless about it. So. Yeah,
but I think he's doing that to. I think Control is trying to do that to become better or something. I don't think Control says, "Oh, if I go and take that, I'm going to destroy all life."
I mean, like it doesn't, but at the same time, it kind of does. It's like it knows it's trying to get to that point, so it can. Mm-hmm. It's not very clear, and this is where the writing falls apart to me. Mm-hmm. Where it's super circular reasoning. It's AI trying to become an AI, but it seems like it already kind of knows what it wants to be, because I feel like Control teleported part of itself from the future to it had to have come from the future, because Arium got infected by it.
I think it's sort of like when you're going through puberty and you know that you want you want to be with a girl, but you don't know what to do about it.
My dick's not big enough yet. Gotta get that stuff in there. You just
need to get two of them.
Yeah,
Klingon style.
But you're just trying to work towards that. You don't know what the answers are, but you know it's something's leading you that down that path. You just don't know what it. Yeah. Anyways, so after the nanobots go into Leland, that scene ends, and then we get back on Discovery, and we see Burnham's going through all the mission logs from her mom. And she sees the whole Klingon attack on her house when she was younger. And what happens is her mom goes forward 950 years into the future. And she has to try to figure a way to get back in time and fix that timeline. But she keeps on getting pulled back wherever she goes back to where she first started 950 years into the future. And she can't seem to fix that. But what she does see is that some antimatter explosions from Control kills all Vulcan, Andoria, Teller Prime, Earth, and what's the other one? Demina? So,
Denova.
And so they're all destroyed. So she realizes that Control is basically going to kill everybody. So that's
I must fix it.
That's not good. And then we have on the bridge, Tilly's talking about the gravity is becoming unstable on Esau 4, and they start talking about Newton's third law of motion, that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And then she explains that the suit and Dr. Burnham are tethered into the future, and the future wants to bring them back. And they're holding them down, but it takes a ton of energy. And this is when Stamets come in, say, we got to do something. We got to get more energy. And so Pike's like, okay, we'll start working on that.
I'm giving her all she's got, Captain. Oh, wait, no.
Right. But then Saru says, he asks Saru, how long do we have? And he says, maybe 2 hours. And Pike says, okay, we better wake her up. Not wake her up from her little nappy nap.
I love how they can estimate how soon the universe will end.
Yeah, I don't know how you can calculate that, but it seems assuming
incalculable.
No, you missed the best part that Tilly had in there, where she's talking about her favorite laws of motion, and then her second favorite laws of motion.
Yeah, and then Saru just like cuts her off, and she goes, ah. Yeah.
Tilly's awesome.
Tilly is great. Yeah, absolutely. And then go back aboard.
I like the way she goes up and down, but that's oh, I know. That's my favorite laws of motion. Woo!
Maybe she likes that one too, Dave. She never got to it.
Aww.
So on Section 31 ship, we Leland, Giorgio, and Tyler are basically Leland says the parameters are different on the mission now. Now all we have to do is get the sphere data off of Discovery. Discovery's security is woefully inadequate, and he believes that Michael Burnham's mother, the Red Angel, is a fake. So, and he's throwing this out as a reason to gather the sphere data, because he says to them, I saw Gabriella Burnham killed. So I saw her body, so it can't be her. So this person's is a forgery of her. And I know you guys all have feelings for Michael Burnham, but we have to save this data, or Control will get that information and use it to become sentient.
Control is getting the data.
Right.
I am Control. Wait, no, I did not say that.
I did not say that. And it's funny because even Giorgio starts looking at him a little suspicious. And he goes, you seem very resolute today. And he says, like, the time
I am a robot today.
I am a robot.
Nice to meet you.
Man. I, for one, say that evil Control possessed Leland is way cooler than normal Leland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, normal Leland's a little wishy-washy and doesn't seem to have it all worked together. But this guy is, you know, all about command. Mm-hmm. Just throwing out orders.
We'll get laid.
So then we go. Let's see. So then we go back to the Michael Burnham's going through the logs, and she's going through over and over, you know, like the whatever 841 logs, and she says that her mom says that she's set up on a Class M planet, which never had any technology on it, so Control should probably have a very difficult time trying to find her. And she keeps on saying that, basically going to the whole thing, that she can't seem to change the timeline. She keeps going back in time, trying to change events, and Control keeps on stopping her or cutting her off somehow. And so she even brings out that she put the sphere right in front of Discovery, so they would interact with it.
But luckily, I know an autistic Vulcan who can see me.
Yes. Yeah, but that doesn't this doesn't get into that at the very moment. But it's but it is interesting. So she realizes that the whole sphere tobacco was from her mom, and that she wanted Discovery to have that information from the sphere. Anyways, then Spock comes in and says that Culber says that there's that her mom is woken up. And so Burnham and Spock go to the bridge, and Pike is talking to Culber, and Culber says that Dr. Culber wants to talk to the captain and the captain only. So the scene ends there, and Michael's a little pissed off, but in the ready room, Michael just basically says, I want to go see my mom. And people are like, she asked to see the captain, so maybe not. And, you know, they go back and forth a couple times on, like, basically she says, I'm the best person to know what my mom's really like and see if it's really my mom. And Culber is talking basically from his own experience, saying your mom might have been changed over the last couple of years of doing all these jumps. So you don't know what kind of person she's turned into now. And she goes, who better gauge than myself? But Pike says, sorry, you ain't going down. So
Captain's prerogative.
Dun, dun, Captain's dun. Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense. I understand that. The only thing about that scene I don't like is I think jumping into the ready room seemed like a weird thing to do. It seemed like something that should have been done on the bridge, like a more spontaneous argument. like, okay, mom's just awake. We only have 2 hours. Let's all debate this in the ready room. Really?
Yeah. I also liked Culver's point of view there where he said that she may not be the person that you knew.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's – and it honestly, when we get to see her more later on, you do kind of see it partially. So for that sure. she's changed quite a bit. So Pike goes down. And she's a containment field around her, so she can't actually get out, but it's also holding her in place. And while he comes down, the whole place starts shaking and basically saying, you know, this, you know, the reactions to the universe is becoming stronger. It's getting harder for us to hold her in place. And Pike's like, well, I better talk fast.
Send me back to the future, Marty.
Back to the future. So we go. He goes into there, and she even makes a little comment. Says, "I could say more about your future, but you won't like it." And Pike is like, "Okay," but then he's
tell
like,
"Tell me how to avoid it, bitch."
Yeah, exactly.
You're coming. You're trying to six time.
Does it involve beeping?
Yeah. Right.
Beep beep.
I give you two
once
beeps.
For yes, two for no.
Yeah. So, they go into this whole thing, basically how she is playing this cat and mouse game with control for who knows how long she's been doing this, jumping back and forth, trying to get control, not to get the sphere data become sentient. So, it won't wipe out all biological sentient life in the universe. And she wants Pike to let her go and go back into the future and then try to fix things again. And Pike's like, we can do it. We can do this here. We can do it right now. And she's like, nah, you're going to screw it up. So she's like, says, basically what you need to do is you need to destroy all the data from the sphere. That's the only way it's going to work. And then Pike mentions about the 7 red bursts. And she says, I don't know anything about that.
That was the most interesting thing about the episode, I think.
I agree.
It might be, yeah. Or she's blatantly lying. So, but she might not know.
Well, she might not know because she hasn't done it yet, or she didn't do it at all. Maybe the 7 simultaneous bursts, it'll be the key to it somehow or something. Right. Maybe she hasn't done that yet.
Right. Well, you know, Pike just basically says, I can't let you go yet. We got to try to figure this out. And she even yells out to him, like, you're a ghost to me. So, and she doesn't want to talk to him. So we jump back on Discovery, and Saru's there with Tyler and with Michael and Captain Pike, and he's basically saying you have to delete the sphere data. And Saru's saying, "Will that be like burning down the Library of Alexandria?" And they have a slight debate, but then everyone just basically agrees. Oh, and I didn't mention before, but Leland sent Tyler over basically to steal all the data from the sphere off Discovery. So he has a little device in his hand that's supposed to, I am assuming, start siphoning the data out, but
just like the one that's supposed to siphon the radiation in Star Trek 4.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's a siphon. I think it's to prevent them from deleting it.
It might have been, but he's definitely. But at some point, he's they're talking back and forth, and then you see he's going to turn it on and start doing his thing, and then he somehow agrees with them. And he turns his device off when they're saying, we got to delete this. It's the only way to keep this out of the hands of control, as tragic as that may be. And once Saru starts doing it, the whole sphere data starts encrypting itself on with an ancient language code that nobody would know because it hasn't been spoken or it's been unknown for thousands of years. So there's no way they're going to ever figure that one out. So Saru has to find a way, but it doesn't look too good. So then we jump into Spock, basically going over Gabriella's mission logs. And she's just talking about Spock, how Spock was the only one that could possibly see her because of his dyslexia and is and the effects of atemporal dysplasia. That he was the only one that could interact with her. So Spock was the key to get the ball rolling, basically.
Autism is the key, just like in the new Predator movie.
Well, he's not. Don't say he's autistic. They say he's dyslexic. There's quite different.
Yeah,
it is. Believe me. But anyways, they Spock and Michael have a moment where they kind of was like it was wrong to judge her about her emotions, and what is it? Michael says it was petty, and he says it was unmerited. So. I like how they have different ways of defining things. So then from there, we got Leland's talking about the Red Angel and how Tyler doesn't want to basically go through Leland's plan. And Leland backs off, realizes that he's not going to be able to control Tyler to do his bidding. So he just says, yeah, just hang loose and, you know, just keep an eye on things and let me know. You made the right call, Tyler. Don't worry about it. So obviously he realized his agent was going to do what he wanted to do. So from there, we get Burnham gets Pike to say that, hey, we can go down to the facility on ESA 4. You can talk to your mom. And so we go down there and Michael and her have quite a strong heart to heart. Would you say?
You're dead to me, child. Let me go back to the future.
I mean, that's probably.
I don't love you no more.
That's probably what I'd expect. Oh. I would expect her to be, you know, after all these time jumps and all these things. It's been so long since she has seen her daughter. I wouldn't expect her to have as much of an attachment.
I thought it was funny because you said that I've seen you die 100 times, and I'll probably see you die 100 more times.
And so I'm detached. It's like, well, then why are you still like? She made it sound like she had no feelings anymore. So why are you trying to save the universe if you've got no feelings about it? You've got to have feelings if you're still trying.
I think she does, but she points out at the very end. She says, "There's only the bigger picture now, nothing else." And so she's like. I have to fix this thing with the control AI to save the universe. I'm the only one who can do it right now, and you people are just in my way. Mm-hmm. You know, and I get it in a certain sense that she's like, this plan that I had didn't work. You guys, you know, trapped me here because I felt that I had to save you, and you know, I kind of get that point, and actually, honestly. Is shitty as it sounds, because she's being real shitty to her daughter who hasn't seen her in, 20 years or so, that she's sticking to a bigger picture than just, you know, her affections.
If that's so, why did she come back and save Michael?
I agree. I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Writing is so bad.
It's bad at points. I think plot points it has some hard times, you know. I don't know. We see her backpedal on all this. Because when Michael first comes down, I think she thinks it's a ploy from Pike to make her more reactive with her, mm-hmm. you know. So anyways, so then we go back to Discovery, and Burnham is talking to Stamets and it's basically saying how long it's got, 43 minutes till we don't have any more power to hold Michael Burnham's mom in place. And so basically, no matter what, even Tyler says maybe the Sector 31 ship can help. And he's like, nah, it's probably not. It's getting too big. So and then we have a great debate until the very end, can I say. But we get this idea about what we can do to get the sphere data off Discovery and save Michael Burnham's mom. And it's basically upload all the sphere data to the Red Angel suit, which has, I guess, quantum computing and has almost infinite state of storage, and let that go far into the future and set it basically to go perpetually into infinity. So the suit is going to keep on going forward into time. And at the same time, they said they could beam their mom. Michael Burnham's mom using some dark matter particles. I'm not quite sure how this exactly works and how they can engineer this within 43 minutes. But
it looked like just regular transporter enhancers we see in Next Gen.
Yeah,
it's just technical babble.
Technical babble. So they're going to beam her and then break basically this tether that's pulling her 950 years into the future. So that's the plan. And then we get the great little scene where Spock says, "I like science," which we will get into later.
I like science. Science is good.
Science is good.
Hey, you like science? We should hang out.
Yeah, man.
I'm glad you and me, baby, ain't nothing but mammals. Let's do it like they do on the Science Channel.
So we get from there, Leland is with Giorgio, basically saying, telling Giorgio that, hey, look, you know, Gabrielle Burnham, she's got a view of everything. She knows everything that's going to happen. She's seen everything that we've done probably hundreds of times. She's a better person than you. So, and she loves, and she has Michael Burnham's undying love. Like, don't you kind of want to get her out of the way kind of thing? So, and she's like, what are you trying to get at? And he says, well, we should get all that sphere data, and they're uploading it onto the suit. So I want to siphon that off. So I want you to beam down there and start my plan in motion to get the sphere data and bring it onto the Section 31 ship.
Go flirt with her a little bit. It'll be fine.
So, yeah, so... so back on ESA 4, Gabrielle Burnham noticed that her suit turns on, and then all of a sudden the security cameras shut off, and who walks in is Giorgio, and she has a little conversation with her, and basically talking about what she's done, what she has been doing, and Burnham seems to know quite a bit about Giorgio. She's watched her over the years, and she knows basically that she's Terran and she's not from the Prime universe as well. So she's quite aware of what's happening here. And so anyway, so we go into this whole thing where she sets up the these little devices that are going to siphon the sphere data and bring it onto the Section 31 ship. So at that time, Giorgio starts having a different thought, and she contacts Tyler and says, "This is going to be a test our
relationship.
Let's test our relationship. So let's see how far we can take this thing." So,
do both your penises still work?
So,
only one way to find out.
Only one way to find out. And so, as while there, she was talking to Michael Burnham's mother. She says that the control considers her an unacceptable risk to the larger mission. And then she remembers that Leland says the exact same thing. So she's like, ah, this is the same person. So somehow Leland has been compromised by control and has taken over. So that's when she decides that she's going to try to cut the feed down at on ESA 4, so Section 31 ship won't get it. So during that time, they've got, what, like 20% of the data that's been
like that.
That's been being vacuumed up. So from there.
Data Hoover!
So Stamets and Michael beam down, and they start setting up the dark matter enhancers for the transporter for Michael Burnham's mom to beam her into our without going into the future. Yes, Dave?
And Leffler Giorgio's like, you have fun with whatever that is.
Yeah, this one's like, whatever that is.
That, and they don't mention anything about, like, oh, all the security cameras went off. Oh, it's, we're not surprised to find Giorgio here. You just keep doing whatever crazy spy stuff you're going to be doing. It won't hurt us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good. Spy stuff never interferes with regular people's stuff.
Never does, never, especially Section 31. So then we have Michael and her mother start having this back and forth conversation, and how she says that she saw her when she graduated, and then she went aboard the Shenzhou for the first time, and how she learned the Vulcan salute, all this stuff. And so she's been watching her daughter this whole time.
How was her mom had time to stalk her entire life and try to save the future?
Well, she can go back and forth in the future. She essentially has infinite time, right?
But
she does.
Wouldn't you age? You're still aging, though. Like, you're spending only 20 years.
Only if you're living a moment with her. So you could go in, like, watch a TV show, just pop in for, you know, maybe an hour and then pop back out.
Yeah, I guess so.
And so technically, that's why she's not that much older than when we see her. I bet you she's only maybe at most a few years older than when we see her originally when the show starts, when Michael's only 10 years old.
Yeah, that's the point.
While we're doing that, Giorgio then deactivates this the little devices that are siphoning things off. And so when she starts doing that, then Leland jumps into action. But at first, Tyler finds out that Leland is Control. And he walks into his, I guess, his office ready room and finds them kind of like deconstructed a little bit on the chair. And then the nanoparticles put them back together.
He's got Predator face going on.
Yeah. And and then he attacks them. Why Leland didn't shoot, Tyler didn't shoot him with his phaser right away, I have no idea. Not that probably would have done anything for what we see later, but, and then Leland stabs Tyler, and I'm like, he calls up Discovery saying,
Leland! And that's Leland. And then he falls down, and we're hoping he's dead.
Please, Tyler's gonna die, but no, that doesn't happen, unfortunately. And then Spock jumps in to the bridge and he says, oh, you know, the Section 31 ship is diverting our data. It's obtained like 37% so far. And then that's when Tilly says the gravity's getting crazy now. It's getting too much. And so Leland beams down with his phaser rifle and a couple other phasers. And they start a big gunfight down on ESOF 4. And we have... him shooting Michael and Nam and Stamets and fighting Giorgio at the same time. So, and he can take the phaser hits and doesn't seem to bother him whatsoever. So
nanites to fix him.
Yeah, and at the last minute, he's got sort of like a Wolverine thing going on. And Burnham and Burnham and Stamets basically say, hey, you know, if
we got to shoot one of the dishes, and then
if we blow up these dishes, it should make a big enough explosion to shut off the field, and they'll be sucked back up into the future.
Yes, back to the future, buddy.
Back to the future. Just Michael says, promises her mom that she'll find her.
I'll find you again, Mama.
And then when the field closes, a wormhole opens, sucks in the Red Angel. And for a second, Michael reaches to shake her mother's hand. Nice to meet you. And it's not enough. And she flies into the future.
But first, woo!
But first, woo! And then,
well, you don't want to land on your face, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, Michael calls up to Discovery, tells him to beam up and then to blow this place to hell. And Pike orders the torpedoes to be fired and blows up the facility. But unfortunately, the transporter signal shows that Section 31 ship beamed up Leland, and they start escaping. And when Pike wants them to chase after him, they said that they've mastered
warp signature. There's an escape pod.
And he's like, oh, there's one escape pod. Oh, identified as Ash Tyler. So,
how do we feel about that?
Yeah. And then, you know how I feel about it. And then in the quarters, Burnham's sitting there listening to watching one of her mother's mission logs and feeling pretty sad. And this is where Spock comes in and says that Control only got 50%. Yeah, I like science. I only got 50% of the Control only got 50% of the sphere's data. And he thinks that her mom was wrong, that the present does matter. What we do right now, says what's happened has happened. The future's unwritten. So what we do now is very important. And he sets up the board to play some chess. And we kind of have like them coming back together after that huge argument we had a couple episodes back. And that wraps up the show for Perpetual Infinity. Dave Kish, what did you think of this episode?
Well, I thought it was okay. Not one of the better ones, not one of the worst. One thing I do want to say, I don't think you guys give enough credit out to the opening music.
You mean the score for it?
Yeah, the opening credit music. I love it. It kind of combines both the old and the new.
It does. I mean, it doesn't have the same ring as Enterprise, but...
Mm. It's been a long time.
They all can't be Enterprises, all
right? I guess they can. You're right.
Yeah. Enterprise is its own beast. Yeah.
But there is something I do want to say, and this happens a lot in episodes, is something happens, like Michael Burnham thinks she sees her mom, and then all of a sudden, everything in the entire universe has to stop, and the most important thing to her is her mom. Did she really talk much about her mom before this episode? I don't think so.
The last time she talked about her mom was in the last episode of season one, when we finally learned why she hated Klingon so very much.
Yeah, it just comes out of nowhere almost. Like, oh, hey, all of a sudden, you super care about this.
So much in Discovery is too little too late. Like, if they would have told us Michael's story in the beginning of season one, maybe I could have felt something for her. But, like, they just leave this reveal to, like, the very end of the season. It's kind of like, why do I care? It's the end of the season. You're wasting time on her backstory when you need to be figuring out the war. I mean, they waste time in these weird spots.
Go ahead.
I a little disagree, because I think they keep on – I mean, there's, like, a character they're kind of, like – you know, you're taking one peel of the skin of the onion off at a time, and you are kind of learning a little bit about her. I mean, we did see, you know, obviously she was raised by Sarek and Amanda, and then, you know, we find out her mom or her parents were killed by Klingons. We don't know what circumstances. So we kind of always figured that at some point she was a little messed up. And in the very beginning of this season, we basically see how she was adopted and brought into Amanda and Sarek's home. So she was 10 years old. So you got to figure that she had a strong relationship with her parents up until that point, and she probably was traumatized from it. So that's my takeaway. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best writing, but I think it's at least they did kind of map it out.
I'm not saying you can't be traumatized for it. I just feel like they just waited to drop any kind of real information on her family life or like what happened to the very last episode. And the last episode of season one was so rushed as it was. Why would you waste time going into backstory in the last episode when you're trying to wrap up a war? Like, it just seems like it could have happened at any point up until that time, you know? I don't know. It just seemed kind of strange.
Yeah, it just kind of seemed sort of, I don't know, Burnham does this a lot in other things too, where she just kind of all of a sudden, oh my God, I super have to do this. This matters so much to me. And it kind of, I don't know, it kind of sometimes feels like it comes out of left field.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
I agree, but I think they were trying to plot that story out. I just, maybe their pacing is totally wrong. They could have got into that a lot more.
Well, same thing with Arium. Like, you're just
Arium's a different story. I mean, Arium, they gave her kind of like a silo, you know, one shot story, basically, which just, it's too bad because she died. I mean, they have been hinting at the whole Michael Burnham thing for a while. This is the first time we really starting, like you said, the last two episodes, where we're really finding out about her parents and what's going on with them. So I don't know. That wasn't a thing for me, but I could see they could have peppered these points in or these, you know, flashbacks in a lot more over time, but they never did. So, but go ahead, Dave.
I do agree with what Dave says about this feels like the Michael Burnham show a little more than like most Star Treks are the story of a ship, or more importantly, like the crew of that ship and the people on them and stuff. This really feels kind of like Michael Burnham is kind of the center of it, and just all these things are happening around her, and she's always somehow involved or related to what's going on.
We don't get any real, I mean, other than Saru and a little bit of Stamets and Culber, we don't get much of anybody else's story. You know,
I do like Culver a little more in this episode, but mainly just because of that one line about she may not be the person you know, and he kind of, you know, relates to that.
Oh yeah, and it's a really good that, you know, he brings that out.
And then I kind of like, well, at least that they're alluding that the signal is something different than the Red Angel. But it still could be the Red Angel, you know, maybe caused the signal without knowing it, or in the future something will cause it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And the signals things, that's just so, you got to wonder. I mean, they even talk about it later in the episode. Like, did she act like she didn't know, or didn't she not really know? So.
But yeah, in the looking at IMDb scores, it looks like this one's kind of in the middle. And that's probably where I would put this episode compared to the others, right about in the middle.
Yeah, I agree. It's not terrible, but does have some issues.
I think the writing always feels a little suspect at times, but the acting is just so good. Like when Burnham wakes up at the beginning and, yeah, I thought I saw my mom and stuff. That was so cool.
Yeah, no, that was great. And then just the interaction between her and her mom, both times she's down on Esau 4, is fantastic. Just fantastic between the two. There's a lot of emotion.
I also like the part where they're talking about deleting the data from the sphere. Mm-hmm. And Ash is there, and you can tell like Ash had done something, but no one picked it. Like you could tell that he, the way he was asking the questions, and kind of like looking a little bit suspicious, but not super suspicious. Mm-hmm. That even before you saw the device in his hand, you knew that he had done something to interfere with what they were trying to do. I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, he's always shady.
Yeah, but I mean, I do wish they should have killed him off. But if they were going to, they would have made him say something a little more like.
It would have been like, "I love you, Michael, forever."
Yeah, they would have given him much more grandiose going away.
Yeah,
but it might have been more exciting too if they like went over there and rescued him or something instead of just some. Oh, look, there's an escape pod. Like, I wonder if they were walking out of the writers' meeting. They're like, oh, we forgot about Ash. Okay, someone just says he's an escape pod. All right, cool. Beer's on me.
Throwaway line. Yeah, exactly.
Just covers our ass so people who like Ash Tyler can stay alive. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I do like Ash Tyler actually. He's kind of that like. You know, that kind of gray area character, and you kind of feel like you can make him be good or he could end up being bad. Like, I don't exactly want him to be killed off, but
I kind of hope he gets hit on the head and becomes Vok again and forgets who Ash Tyler is. Because the thing is, the Ash is just the little program they put over top of Vok. So I just can't wait for him to get his head hit, to get a concussion or something, and never be Ash Tyler ever again. That would be great.
Well, we might see that come out with when he goes back to that planet for the Klingon world.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we're going to see that next episode. So that's what they alluded to in the trailer.
Klingon Machnok Judge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's pretty much my take on it. It's cool. Not bad, not great, somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but great acting for sure.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, the acting's phenomenal.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, original Star Trek, right, had actually very good writing, but I love William Shatner. He's my buddy, but his delivery wasn't exactly the best.
Yeah, I'm back and forth with that. Like, I know it's not great, but it's also kind of a reflection of the times, too. So that's why I always give it a little bit of pass. And something about that you couldn't with any of those actors, you'd swap out, you know, Shatner, Nimoy, DeForest, you know, Kelly. That show probably would never have worked. You needed those types of people, and something about their personality and their charisma or something shined through more than anything else. I can't quite put my finger on it why it was such a phenomenon, you know, and why we're talking about it 50 years later. So,
yeah, without a doubt.
I mean, when TNG came around, you know, you have Patrick Stewart, you know, so just forget about it. It's like the best acting you could possibly get. So this, and I really think we're getting some fantastic acting in Discovery.
If only the writing was half as good.
Tell me about it.
How about you, Aaron?
That's my take.
Yeah, great.
What are your thoughts, Aaron?
So I was saying before we started recording, I sent it I posted a couple things to the Facebook group, which seemed to have got some people either agreeing or riled up about it. First, obviously, Ash Tyler, I am not a fan of. He wore thin on me early on in season one. And I just think just because he's a good looking guy doesn't mean his character is a good character. And I pointed out before, you know, he killed Culber and he, you know, he's still walking around the ship. He attacked Michael Burnham. It's like, what point, like if you're attacked by your significant other, I mean, I think you need to do a reality check of what your relationship is.
But it wasn't really him. It was the Klingon inside.
Yeah, and then you know, somebody said, like, yeah, but that Vox, not that part's not turned on right now. Like, well, when is it going to turn on, and how do we know? It's like the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of thing, you know? Like, what's the Mangerian candidate, you know, code word to spring him back to life kind of thing? So, I don't know. It really frustrates me. I'm resigned that he's going to probably be around for another 18 seasons. So, whatever.
And a Section 31 show.
Yeah, and a Section 31 show. And probably he'll find his way to Picard somehow. You know, make me want to stab my eyes out.
He'll go to the future.
My other thing is, you know, the other thing that I really hated, and I watched this episode twice. And the first time I was watching it by myself in my living room when Spock says, "I like science." And as sort of a
Aaron cried inside.
It was like a punchline. And again, I don't think these writers know how to write for Vulcans. It's just like I posted that as well. I took a shot of it while I was watching it. I paused it and reversed it, so I had the line come up. "I like science." And I'm just like, what? At what point does Spock actually say anything like that? And I got a lot of back and forth. It's really weird. So here's the thing: is I just want to say two things about it. One is, if you've listened to the show, you know that I do have issues with things from time to time with the writing and some of the stuff they do. But I don't hate this show. I think it has a lot of good qualities to it, but I think sometimes their writing is just really bizarre, you know, like the things that they say and do. And him saying, "I like science," is kind of stupid because, yeah, he's a science officer for the Enterprise. He you know, went to the Vulcan Science Academy. Yeah, he likes science. He's in the science division. Why does he even need to say that?
But he's autistic now, so he can say, "I like science."
Yeah. And it's like I said something to – so I had this back and forth with Bill Smith or Will Smith from Trek Geeks on Twitter. And we didn't – I mean, it wasn't like an argument. Basically said – I said it seems like a Tilly line to me, you know. And he says, you know, Tilly would have said it would have been more nervous or where he said it more to, you know – I don't know, like more assertive. And I just kind of said, well, we can agree to disagree kind of thing, but whatever. I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's just, you know, people have different takes on things. I get it. Whatever. I mean, it's just that I just don't think this is
We're a all Spock different line. People. We're all different people who have different opinions. That's how life works.
I don't know. It's just, and then, you know, he has said things funny. Like I said, in the past, Spock has said things in the past that are funny. He said things like I was mentioning the Tholian web, where he throws out the joke that he's him and McCoy never went over the files for what would happen if he died.
And Cat's Paw, whenever Kirk asks him for opinions, and he's like, "Their poetry's terrible."
Yeah, I mean, he does make little jokes. I mean, for sure. And it's like, but it's they're not simplistic. They're more of like a dry wit, you know? I don't know. It's a different I don't – maybe this is him trying to get his head around humor. I don't know. It just does not – I'm not saying Spock never says a funny line, and he definitely does. He has like the little dry line, but "I like science" seems so simplistic for Spock.
Goodbye, Spock.
Yeah, that was actually kind of funny, but – or maybe it was, and they were broadcasting that into their thoughts. I can't tell, but – but yeah, so anyways, that's how I feel. I literally it was when it came on, I just started saying, I was in my living room by myself and I went, "No, no, no." So, I'm sorry if you disagree with me. You're perfectly free to disagree with me. I don't care if you're listening to this episode. It's just, this is not what I picture of Vulcan or Spock. Yes, they can say humorous lines, but not in a simplistic 5-year-old manner. So that's where I'm at with that. Other than that, the episode, like we said before, fine acting. Some issues with the writing for sure. Not gaping holes, but just little weird little things here and there. But I did like it. I thought they had some, it flowed a lot easier than last episode for sure. Like the scenes kind of went, the only one that kind of brought me out of the moment was when they had the ready room where Michael's trying to, you know, petition her case to see her mother and Pike shuts her down. That was the only one I thought it was like, would they really be in the ready room? So that's where I'm at for that. Dave.
This episode, I think it's better than the last couple episodes for sure. I agree with Dave Kish. It's somewhere in the middle as far as for season two quality. But just the writing is just starting to kill me. Like the control needing more AI to become more AI is kind of like weird and circular. It seems like it's already knows what it needs to become from the future, so that's why it's trying so hard to get the sphere data. It's oddly circular, and they haven't really explained it too well. It's just, it feels super sloppy to me, unfortunately. And what about the fucking USS Relativity? For the love of God, why hasn't Michael Burnham or Miss Dr. Burnham gone 400 years into the past to try to get them to follow her into the future so that she can talk to them face to face and then they could work on it together? There's time ships only 500 years in the future from this point, 29th century, oh, 600 years because in 23rd century. But still, yeah. Like, I'm guessing life gets wiped out somewhere between the 700 and 800 years later because everything's super barren. Probably doesn't even need to take that long for things to get super barren. So there's other points in the timeline where she can get way better help than Discovery.
Well, how would she know to go to that? Because that would be to the future of her, and then she jumped way past it in the future. So she'd either need to go all the way back to where she was and go through all the years and find out what it is. But it seems like she's only time traveling around the Burnham years, the Michael Burnham years.
That's true. But I mean, like, you got to figure out where, like, the, because we don't know when the apocalypse happens. So it just seems silly to only go back to one time period. Like, wouldn't you have investigated a bunch of time periods to figure out like when things start to fall apart or investigate other technology? And you just, or even hell, go just a couple years into the future where time travel's normal. Cause the Enterprise, was it Gary 7 episode? They're just like routinely going back in time to check on 20th century Earth.
Yeah, they would go back in time once in a while.
They would just go back in time like it was totally normal. Like, it's just like they've got time travel like as old hat. Like, it just, I don't know. It just, there's so much. And, you know, and she's linked to Spock for some reason. Spock's on the Enterprise, and Enterprise time traveled seemed like on the regular and TOS. So, I don't know. There's just lots of better reasons.
Well, not just that. We also saw in Voyager there was plenty. Who were the time patrol police that came up?
The USS Relativity. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they should have at least intercepted that kind of change in the time stream.
Yeah, sure. In the temporal Cold War, people from Enterprise. Like, there's several different time factions, and this is why I was getting excited, hoping it was a temporal Cold War thing. And, like, they're jumping, because, I mean, we had the part in Enterprise where they jumped into the future and, like, everything was destroyed.
Yeah.
Because they did that Enterprise, too. And so, I mean, there's just so much time travel in Star Trek. How come no one can help her out? Like, how come no one else has noticed this aberration in the timeline? It's just kind of annoying that just like, there's all this stuff and like no one is trying to fix it except this one person. I'm just like,
and especially something that's so pivotal on, you know, what history it will, what will happen to the universe. I mean, if, you know, Vulcans destroyed an Earth and you know, all the other, you know, big planets. So
I mean, the only thing I can think of as to why this isn't happening is that Discovery is its own timeline and like none of this stuff happens. Like the USS.
Oh, God. Happen.
I mean, because I mean, like, it's the only logical thing other than that the writers have no idea what they're doing and have no idea about Star Trek lore.
But that's such a get out of jail free card. That's kind of like the JJ verse, right? Oh, we do this thing and we're totally different than the other and we don't have to follow
canon. But CBS has maintained that they are a prime timeline. But I mean, it's kind of hard to reconcile. One of the things I was talking about beforehand is like this show would be – it's something we talked about with Trek Yards last year on Discovery. Everything about Discovery makes 100 times more sense if it's a post-Voyager series.
Agreed.
Everything.
Why did they have to make a prequel? Why a prequel?
The only reason – and this is what I wanted to say. This is why I think the writing's bad. The reason why it's a prequel – is because they know their story's not great, and so they have to give us a reason to care. And so the reason we care is because it involves Spock and Spock's family, because mm-hmm. Michael's an adopted sister, and we can do callbacks to original Star Trek stuff, so we care. But I feel like they know their story is bankrupt as far as from a storytelling perspective, which is why they didn't set it in the future, because if they did the same story with totally new characters, there'd be less reason for us to care.
I agree. I think if this was set after Voyager sometime, season one, season two, even if you had a Klingon war, would still be so much more interesting, so much more fascinating, and it would be totally and you didn't...
The Klingon fear of homogenization makes a lot of sense then. The ships being bigger and more powerful and neat-looking, because the ships do look like post-Voyager era design ships. They don't look like pre-TOS Agreed. Ships. Like... this new future thing, like, you know, rewriting the timeline so that, things can't happen. Because, I mean, like, if this thing is jutting the timeline, if it's jutting the timeline further in the future, maybe the relativity can't exist. But everything so far in the past, relativity should be monitoring all this stuff.
Yeah.
In the timeline. And it's just, I don't know. And then the typical Cold War people from Enterprise should be monitoring this because they're in, like, the 29th century also. It's just, there's so much stuff. In Star Trek, they should be preventing this from happening. Like, they could have prevented the Klingon War from happening if the Klingon War wasn't supposed to happen. Since, like, in season one, where it was like, where's the relativity? Where's the relativity? Why didn't the relativity go back and bring Discovery back to the beginning of the war instead of leaving them around for 9 months? Why'd they leave them gone? They could have just, okay, Discovery, you need to go back to where you were in time.
Maybe
we can do
maybe,
this.
Maybe they'll do an Ex Machina thing at the very end where, you know, like you said, the relativity comes in and fixes all that shit. I don't think they will because, you know.
Why not? I mean, Star Trek does the non sequitur episodes. Why not do a whole – why not do an entire show that's a non sequitur?
So
why not?
You'll have like a final episode that just has Riker cooking and telling the story at the end of the series.
Exactly.
Early.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, Enterprise, the entire series got relegated to Riker's holodeck shenanigans. I mean, like, because the chef, you never saw his face, and the chef, I'm pretty sure, showed up in season one. So that means all of Enterprise is suspect. That's why, you know, you can say that Enterprise breaks canon, and it doesn't matter because it's all Riker's holodeck thing.
I guess this will be what, O'Brien's holodeck or something?
Oh, boy.
Maybe. That'd be great. I'd love to have an O'Brien cameo. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, I don't have a lot to say about the episode specifically, but just, like, as a whole, the season's falling apart for me.
Yeah, the wheels are coming off the ride
like,
real fast. It started off so amazing, and there's still points of light during it. You're like, oh, I like that, or this is a good part. But the main story threads are just unraveling, and you're just like, what? So
well, it's because it's trying to do its own thing. The reason why the first couple episodes were so good is because they were making great callbacks, and now that Discovery's trying to do its own thing, it's not doing as well. Like, if they would have tied this into Temporal Cold War with Enterprise, that would be great, because you're recalling canon, you're wrapping up the story that we never really got a satisfactory ending to. Oh, that would be beautiful if they did that. But they're doing this own weird thing, and they're, like, not taking into account all this other Star Trek canon that would make a lot of the stuff moot. It's just like, why aren't they thinking about this? Do they not know? Do they not know what Star Trek is? And all the other stuff that happens in Star Trek?
I don't think they do. I keep on saying it over and over again. I don't think any of these writers, they need to have a guy like, you know, you or me or any, like, you know, just...
Larry Nemechek.
True Trek fan that knows their shit inside and out. Go like, wait a second. You know, they touched on this type of story before, and here's the episode, and this is the breakdown. You should see this episode, or you should know about the USS Relativity and stuff like that. But It's like they don't, like, these people don't fucking know anything about Star Trek.
I mean, even if they didn't watch Voyager, they referenced Enterprise in season one. Season one, you've got the temporal Cold War guy, like, you know, popping up all over the place, and they jump pretty far into the future. Like, temporal Cold War, I mean, like, even if they don't know anything, they gotta know Enterprise, because that's the canon they're referencing.
Right.
In season one, why not reference more Enterprise? Like, it's just, I just don't understand, like, what they're doing with the show. Because it started off with great promise, because it felt more Star Trek-y, and Pike was great, the callbacks were great. And then, like, as they're doing their own thing, it's just falling apart, and I really hope they can put it back together in the last three episodes, but I'm worried they're not going to be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they may have written themselves a bit into a corner or something like that. But at the same time, too, I'm not sure the series is the sole target audience of it is existing Star Trek fans. I think they're trying to generate some new ones. I just kind of wish they would, you know, especially not muck with Spock.
I agree. I think they are trying to cater to new Star Trek fans, because, like, where's, like, the deep thoughts? So much of this show is just surface layer. Like, you take what you get. Like, there's not, I don't know, I don't think we've gotten as deep on Discovery episodes as we've gotten on some, like, old episodes of Star Trek, like Pale Moonlight. There's so much to debate, like this, the morality of it all. And, like, this seems like, you know, they bring up the Prime Directive, but, oh, we're just going to ignore the Prime Directive. I think after, like, the third episode, I was like, why don't they just rescind it for the rest of the season? I mean, because they keep just, I mean, it's like a fake quandary. They're just ignoring it, so let's just rescind it. And then it actually hasn't come up since that episode, really. The Prime Directive.
Or even like super deep stuff, like that one episode with it was Enterprise with Phlox, and like they had like a pandemic or something
The genocide episode.
Dude, that was deep, man. That kind of, like, you watch that and you felt kind of, I don't know about this. I've never had that feeling with this show.
Yeah, not yet. The show does not give me any deep feelings at all. It doesn't make me contemplative like old good Star Trek has. It's very surface level. And, like, if they're trying to cater to a Game of Thrones crowd, which is why I thought before they announced it, when they were saying it's going to be on an online platform, that would give them the freedom to do that. But they're not even doing that. They're not even trying to cater to the Game of Thrones crowd with, like, the excess gore and the nudity and all that stuff. I don't know who their audience is. I mean, it's got to be.
They haven't figured that out either. It's so bizarre to me. It's like we said at last episode, you know, they're still keeping with formatting for, you know, regular TV. You know, cut that shit out, man. I mean, it's like you don't need to do commercial breaks anymore. Just stop. You know, if you have our dollars, why do you need more advertising? Secondly, like we said,
only Star Trek fans are going to pay to watch it, so they should be catering to Star Trek fans.
Right. And you have, you know, it doesn't have to go 40 minutes to an hour. It could go, you know, maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter. You know, like we were talking about Umbrella Academy last episode. There's some episodes are 40 minutes, some are over an hour. You know, it's like it's just what however it takes. Who gives a fuck? You're watching the whole season. Enjoy it, you know? Yeah, that's another thing that pisses me off. Just unload the whole fucking season. Like like Netflix, you can watch and burn through an episode, I mean, a season in what? A week or so. You know, maybe if you can watch a lot, you can do it in a couple days, you know? But I mean, still, I mean, it's just like, it just to me, it's like, why are we like being strung along, you know, every episode? I don't know. Their idea is so stupid. They're so behind the old model. They can't get ahead of it. Just look at Netflix model. Look at HBO. That's what you need to do. Just do it that way.
Well, HBO does release every week, though.
Mm-hmm. True. You're right about that. Yeah, they do. And maybe because it's a bigger budget. Yeah, like Umbrella Academy is not that big of a budget. So
HBO releases every week because they're tied to the regular TV station. Because they come on the TV station and they come out on demand. Whereas CBS All Access is only a streaming platform like Netflix. Their stuff doesn't come to regular TV.
Yeah, so. Not only that, but they're trying to hold on to that subscription, right? If they just release it all at once, we'll buy it for a week or a month, binge watch it all, and then turn it off again. It's the only thing I watch on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, exactly. We got Twilight Zone starting soon. I'm excited to watch that, but I think it starts tomorrow, actually, or it'll be yesterday as of when this comes out. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I know, like, I don't hate Discovery. but I feel like I'd like it more if they would stay true to Star Trek.
Stay true to Star Trek. Get with the new times. Stop keeping this old model of programming.
Like,
you know,
I like the idea of a strong story arc, but like, tell a story arc. Like, it's the season's been terribly jerky as far as like flow goes because they're trying to make it more episodic and do the long storytelling. So we get exposition dump episodes, and we get like plot episodes, and then because you get one episode that's just like a dump of information, like they're trying to make it flow, and it just feels so jerky. Like, looking at season two in the micro, there's so much to like about it. The ships are better. Pike is great. The acting has gotten a lot better, I think. They're letting Sonequa Martin-Green do beautiful things. Her expressions, her acting. Most of the people on the shows are acting. It's just so good. Like, if the writing and the consistency was only half as good as the acting, this show would be absolutely incredible. Because the visuals are there, the cast is there, the effects are there, the show looks great, the set design is great. The worst thing about the show is the writing and the shakeup of the directors. And, you know, like we said, I was worried going into season two that I was worried I was going to feel incoherent because of the shakeup. And I don't know if it's incoherent because of the shakeup. It's incoherent.
Yeah, I always got the impression, and I could be completely wrong about this, but that the people who wrote for the original series and Next Gen, these were people, writers, that might have gone to school and studied Shakespeare or read Greek tragedies or read deep philosophers or, you know, and took time and really absorbed all this. I feel like the people that are writing right now for Discovery are like, have bachelor's degrees and they just graduated. And these people don't know. I mean, maybe they do. I could be wrong, but I just don't. I always felt like I was learning something every time I watched Star Trek. This time, I don't feel like I'm learning anything.
Did you see the South Park episode where they're talking about the porpoises who write for Family Guy?
No, I don't think I said
that. Is how I feel about this.
This is how I feel Star Trek Discovery is going. Like, because the South Park was making fun of Family Guy because the jokes that are so random and dumb. It's like they said it's like a bunch of random porpoises. Like there's a bunch of beach balls with like words on them or something. The porpoises knock them into a different tank and they use what they knock into the tank. To make a joke out of. That's how it feels like Discovery is being written for right now. Like I don't hate the show, so don't run away and say, oh, Synthaholics hates the show. Like, I want to like the show, but there's just writing. Writing is a show. So if you've got great everything else and the writing's bad, it falls apart. Like Prometheus. Prometheus had great actors. It had great special effects. You know, they had good actors, and the acting was pretty solid. But the story is garbage. If the story is bad, the writing is bad. It can't no amount of special effects and good acting is going to save it. Like the like the prequels. I mean, like great actors.
I don't know. Michael Bay may think otherwise.
Yeah, well,
Michael Bay acts with explosions, and there's not even a lot of explosions in Discovery to carry Discovery. So I mean.
And to go along with that, Dave, my tweet that I got in the thing with Bill Smith from Trek Geeks, it got retweeted by a Twitter handle STD sucks, and it says Star Trek Discovery STD sucks bad, bad writing, lens flares, Klingons at 31% Rotten Tomatoes audience score for season two. So I got a ton of likes and even retweets. Dave, I've posted like all sorts
of
stuff.
So much Star Trek stuff. And the one time.
So much Star Trek stuff.
The one time we say something negative on social media, the assholes will come and take it and they're going to run into the mud.
I don't hate Discovery. I just think
it could be better.
It has so much potential to be better. It just has everything it could possibly do to be better. Like, if it would stay more Enterprise callbacks, like, this season could have been so much better. Like, do the temporal Cold War thing. This control thing, I'm not digging it.
Well, and we still have the mystery of the, you know, seven lights. We don't know anything about that yet. I mean, is that, you know, Gabriel Burnham, or is that something else? Is that control?
That's interesting. But again, Discovery gives us no clue on. I mean, is she lying? Is she not lying? Is she going to do it soon? to get Discovery's attention, even though she's already got it. I don't know. It's like, with time travel, you can do all this weird circular stuff.
Yeah,
It's interesting. Discovery just has so much potential to be so much better than it is, and I think that's what you're hearing from us. We're just it's got so much potential, and it's just being squandered.
We also got a little message in a bottle from Holly.
Yeah.
Should I read that?
Yes, please.
It's because it kind of goes opposite of everything. Well, not everything, but parts of everything. So this is what Holly, since she can't be with the show, she just wrote us a quick note that she wanted to get her take on this.
She's a genie in a bottle.
So picture her saying this in a much better way than I'm going to say it right now. So anyways, channeling my inner Holly. That's my inner Holly. Okay, so Leland is infected. I'm not sure if me being right counts because Control entered him through like a spinal fluid instead of a pierced eye, but still. And she did kind of call that. So I was confused on that last episode.
I think the eye thing was it implanting the holographic projector so he could see the holographic thing. I think that's what happened.
But it also took him out.
Yeah, it knocked him down,
And next she says Dr. Burnham was either lying about the signals to keep Control from finding out about what they are, or Control has been controlling the signals all along. Yes, they could be either one. So this could be something Control is throwing out, or this could be something that Dr. Burnham doesn't want Control to find out. Absolutely. Which I don't know how Control wouldn't know by now. Why would Control know by now? Because Section 31 knows about signals. And then we get to my favorite part. I like science. In my opinion, she says, Spock has always been a humorous character, always saying things that humans find funny. But joking was not his intention. I like science, in my opinion, was a suitable line because it's kind of an obvious fact that Spock tends to point out, you know? Like sometimes he just points shit out and you look at your chief medical officer and roll your eyes. I know this is not what your guys' opinion is on the line, and this season we have seen some things from Spock that are uncharacteristic to Spock we know and love, but I think it suits the character. I even went and watched YouTube video compilations of funny things Spock says. Anyways, I keep thinking back to Calypso Short, and now that I think about it, here are some observations. The brightest star, Saru's portion of the season seems to have ended, which is true. Saru's story is kind of eclipsed now. Runaway, Tilly's portion of the season seems to have ended. We don't get much about Tilly anymore. Calypso. Is Discovery abandoned because they somehow trap Control in her, and they control and when Control is left alone for so long, it does make them less intent to on the ending on all sentient life? And then lastly, she says the escape artist. I'm curious to see how Harry Mudd, but only because I still don't see how the short is important at all, except maybe the head of Harry Mudd is part of the ship and is pumping out cyber muds. So he is basically a ship now, which I think I said that when we discussed the shorts. That's that only kind of ties in because it would mean that he is now an augment human like Arium. So, good point. Calypso must tie into this somehow. If Discovery gets pushed into the future somehow, then that's possible.
I don't think Calypso's going to tie in at all.
No,
because they've already announced season 3. I don't think Discovery's going to get stuck in the future. I think it's a different timeline too, because the humans are at a war, and that guy that gets found out. So it's a different timeline. Or the Discoveries in the future and in Calypso. I don't think they're going to tie in at all. I mean, the only one that ties in, I think, is the Saru one. I don't think any of the other ones tie in at all.
Well, Runaway didn't seem to really tie in at all.
Runaway's not. The only one that's going to tie in is the Saru one, I think. I don't think any of the other ones are going to tie in at all. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think so, too. I also think after hearing this that Holly should be a writer for Discovery. She has good ideas.
She does.
Yeah, and she sees a couple things sometimes that we don't see, and I mean, we all have ideas, and or we all have takeaways, and sometimes those aren't totally right. But obviously she's trying to fit. Sometimes I think that she's trying to fit all of the threads together, and maybe she's too clever than the writers. She's cleverer than the writers are, because I think a lot of the writers are probably just getting stoned and saying, "That's good enough, man."
Yeah, just put him in an escape pod.
Just put Tyler in an escape pod and let's go out, man.
Well, yeah. since we all think the first couple episodes were way better than the ones that followed him,
I agree.
Maybe Aaron Berg and Gretchen, Aaron Harberts and Gretchen Berg, maybe them yelling at the writers was actually doing some good.
You know what? You're probably right.
I'm just, I feel bad. It's not fun getting yelled at, but I mean, the quality of the first five episodes from the writing perspective is definitely more superior to what's happened since then. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks, but it's just kind of like, ooh, maybe they were right. As much shade as I threw at them, I'm like, well, maybe the writers, maybe the writers need the whip.
Don't spare the whip. I don't know. I don't think anybody should be abused in the workplace.
No, but, I don't think so either. But at the same time, I'm just like, huh.
Just an undisciplined bunch of writers can probably be dangerous. Probably, and I don't know. I mean, Alex Kurtzman, we've talked before. We're very hesitant because he's got the keys to the kingdom for Star Trek right now. And this could turn out to be a wonderful time of Star Trek, or this could be this Titanic sinking, so.
It's going to sink very, very slowly.
Yes, so I hope it's not that, but whatever.
We'll see. All right, Dave, is there any place on the internet where you would like people to reach out to you, or would you like to remain internet anonymous?
Oh, no. Don't call us. We'll call you.
All right. Fair enough.
Very good. Well, the show you can find online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. Join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/syntholics. Our music is provided by Warp 11, except the intro. That's by Dave Wilkes. If you want to find us on Twitter, the show's at Synthaholic Duo. I personally am at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. And Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. Say some nice things about us so other people can see us through the Apple algorithms. And after that, if you can, go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Synthaholics, and throw us a buck, maybe more. Helps the podcast get funded so we can do wonderful things like buy big wheels and race around in our driveways. And if you can't do that, we understand. A great way to support the podcast is to either maybe share or retweet or tell people about the podcast. It's a great way to let everyone know that we're out there and exist. So tell your family members and your best friend and your wife and your husband or whoever else. Synthaholics is a thing. It's coming. I got retweeted because of my hate. It's not hate, guys. It's not hate. It's just
an observation. And please retweet some good stuff from us, please. I mean, we're not out to bash. We give props when it's deserved, and we call it when it's not. I mean, I like to think we're fair and balanced on Synthaholics.
Speak truth to power.
That's right.
Most definitely. Well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank
great.
You for being a long time listener.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I've been enjoying the ride.
Yeah, and now you're part of the ride. Woo! I hope it didn't break the immersion.
Too late.
All right. Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. We did it.
Did it.
Thanks so much, Dave. It was awesome having you on.
Man, that was a lot of fun. I'm sorry about interrupting. I'll dial back on that.
Oh, no. I mean, that's kind of how the show rolls.
it's
all remote, too.
Yeah, it's hard on Skype. I mean, when me and Dave are in the same room, it's a little easier because we can just see when somebody wants to jump in. But when you're on Skype and it's hard to see,
you know, when somebody's done with a point or they're going to jump in because you can see they're getting all hot and bothered by something was said. So
yeah.
Ash Tyler ejects an escape pod. Oh, that's like, I am never going to stop thinking of that. That is like the jump the shark moment for me.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
Awesome.